Let me just take a sip of my instant coffee. I don't remember if it's Maxwell House or Folgers, but it's not bad. It's not a New Year's resolution. I guess we would call it like a mid-year's resolution. When I resolved to stop spending so much at the fancy coffee places, and especially when I'm at home, drink more instant coffee and take the money that I would have spent and give it to the poor. Give it to organizations that are providing relief for, you know, flood-ravaged towns and tornado-stricken villages like Hugo, Minnesota, which pops up in my blog coming up in just a few minutes. I'll post that at coasttocoastam.com right after I'm done with a little crypto news. This is Ian Punnett with a face for radio and a voice for print. And I want to point out, too, that we've got a big show coming up both tonight and tomorrow night. Looking forward to Paul Stonehill. We'll continue the conversation we started last week about the Denver UFO supposed video release of that ET image. And we'll talk about it with Paul Stonehill a little bit. Also get into a discussion about the Nazi skulls or the search, the Nazi supposed search for the crystal skulls in South and Central America. We'll talk about that with Paul Stonehill because, as you know, he's a well-known researcher on the subject. He's somebody who is especially well-respected internationally, and I want to talk about some of his Russian work in UFO investigations, too, on the way next hour on Coast to Coast AM. Tomorrow night, a very special guest, Jesus Christ. More on that later. Also, coming up this hour, Carol Simontacci will join us. Her book about the crazy makers, about the food industry, it seems particularly pertinent with this move to get all the various food dyes, particularly red dye, removed from the diet of Americans, especially children. This is a movement that's been going on across the country. And a lot of people that I trust, people that I respect, swear that both their children and even themselves are affected by food dyes, and that they do, in fact, go a little bit crazy with just the dye that's added to the food. We'll talk about that coming up a little bit later on this hour. Before I forget, I also want to give a shout out to the guys at Blue Cat Garage in St. Paul, not far from where I live. Ryan, Neil, Nick, and especially Aaron, who sold me one of my very favorite things in the world, my completely refurbished 1963 Vespa scooter. I'll put a picture of that coming up in my blog in just a few minutes when I get it up this hour. Aaron travels to India frequently where he buys original Vespas and restores them. But while he was there last, he contracted a typhoid fever. Somebody who had prepared without properly washing their hands had given it to him. Glad you're feeling better, Aaron. I am too, after getting my beloved scooter back after some lady had backed into it with her trailer hitch. Ow. But it looks good. I know it'll look better coming up. Thank you for taking such good care of that. Also, I had a busy week. One of the things I learned this week was how to take digital photos and then upload them onto my blog. I went a little crazy on that. We'll tell you more about that and do crypto news next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, as I mentioned, it's been a busy week for me. I was on at the Barack Obama rally as a member of the working media last Tuesday night. I stood about 10 yards from him. My wife, who has much more experience in news gathering, snapped some photos. I'll put those up at the blog when I do, including the picture of me trying to look like a serious journalist there at the Xcel Energy Center. And I say serious journalist, meaning that while we were waiting for Obama to take the stage, all the journalists did were just kind of stare off into space. All these big famous news anchors were just sitting there staring out into nothingness, bored out of their heads, waiting for the cameras to go live and for Obama to go up on stage. So I tried to ape what they were doing as best as possible. Obama seemed kind of tired to me. I've enjoyed some of his speeches that I've seen on television in the past, but this one seemed a little joyless. Of course, we heard later on that Senator Clinton had made her speech before Obama had come on, but not conceded. In fact, it talked about continuing the fight and everything. And so maybe he wasn't so much tired as he was just sick and tired of the whole process. Anyway, it was a good experience to be so close to the presumptive Democratic nominee. If you were watching that speech the other night, I was less than a first down away from the podium. How about that? I was a short pass away. I could have hit him easily with a football. And that's all I would have hit him with, by the way. I don't want the Secret Service coming after me. Meanwhile, in crypto news, did you hear that presumptive Republican White House nominee John McCain said this week he would like to see a manned mission to Mars as part of a, quote, better set of priorities for NASA that would better engage the public? He said he would be willing to spend more taxpayers' dollars to continue the program, but argued that NASA must do a better job of inspiring the American public, as when it sent a man to the moon in 1969. John McCain said one of his favorite books is War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells, released in 1898, when John McCain was just a teenager. And if you also want to take a glimpse into the future, how about this for a story? A woman who had her camera stolen got a close-up of the thieves when the photos they took of themselves were automatically uploaded to her computer. Allison DeLauzen had her digital camera stolen while she was on vacation in Florida, meaning that she had to accept the loss of many treasured family snapshots. But boom, suddenly not only did she get those images back, but she also got a few more when the men who stole her camera began posing with their prize, totally oblivious to the fact that the pictures were being transmitted via cyberspace. How about that Bluetooth? Earlier today, I took our digital camera. My family went through the tornado-ravaged town of Hugo, Minnesota, in the hardest-hit neighborhood. Most destroyed homes were largely gone from their foundations. I'll put some photos up on the blog, including one that ended up in the pond behind the house, taken off of the foundations and dumped in the pond behind the house. This was amazing, but partly what was so amazing, but there's only one loss of life during the actual tornado. A woman had later lost her life while cleaning up, but it was pretty extraordinary. I think even more extraordinary is that so few people died, despite the fact that none of those homes had basements. The water table is too high there, so actually they're sort of cut low into the ground. There's a crawl space, maybe a 3 or 4 foot crawl space under the house for mechanicals, but mostly there's no basement at all. And that's, people were kind of stuck in the middle of their houses trying to ride them out. I put some pictures up. I'll get to them in just a minute. With the deaths of that small boy in his backyard pond after the storm and the older woman who died of a heart attack while sifting through what remained of her home, there's been a lot of sadness in Hugo, obviously, like a lot of towns hit by tornadoes. Saturday, however, was a celebration of the first responders, and I put some photos up of that. It was kind of neat. And while we're looking forward to the future, a more hopeful future, clean tech biofuels is serious about turning garbage into fuel. Got this story from FARC.com. Pretty interesting. They hope, clean tech biofuels hopes, that you will ignore the fact that your car's fuel tank could be carrying what's left of your children's soiled nappies. The company has announced it is investigating suitable sites for a commercial garbage to ethanol facility, leading baby owners everywhere to rejoice that they may never again have to feel guilty about throwing out those disposable diapers every day. And can we make a point, too, that not only can you feel better about throwing out disposable diapers, but then, you know, we don't have to be using food for fuel. And again, those food prices will come down, and hopefully fuel prices will, too, eventually. And by the way, they say that that this isn't some, you know, pie in the sky thing. It could happen maybe someday. In fact, they'll come out with a minivan where you can just take your kids' wet Pampers and shove them directly into the gas tank. Wouldn't that be nice? Call it the Toyota Prius or something. Anyway, don't have to go too far into the future for this new product. Polaroid recently announced it will launch its Pogo portable photo printer later this summer. The printer, whose name is short for Polaroid On The Go, according to Polaroid, achieves its compact size by not requiring any ink cartridges. Instead, it uses zero ink technology photo paper to convey the image. How cool is that? Take some digital photos and then just print them out right there on the site. That way, you know, the thieves that steal your digital camera will incriminate themselves through the internet and then have some nice prints for their next scrapbooking project all ready to go. And they'll have time to work on that scrapbooking project, I hope. Here's something I don't want a photo of from Levittown, New York. This story, according to CBS Channel 2 in New York, there was a warning issued Thursday to homeowners after a Long Island woman's home was infested with blood-sucking parasites. It wasn't bed bugs or journalists that caused the problem, but bird mites. Quote, "I was hysterical crying last night," said Crystal Shea, the daughter of the bird mite victim. "You know, I feel terrible for her. How do you watch your mom come out in a hazmat suit?" The emotional daughter of the bird mite victim shared ominous-looking photos of her mother being suited up in a biocontainment gear by emergency medical technicians responding to her SOS from her home in Levittown. They stripped her of her clothing, shoes, carted off her mattress, confiscated the wild bird nest from a bathroom vent, and transported the patient to the quarantine unit at Nassau University Medical Center. CBS Channel 2 spoke by phone with Nina Bradica from her hospital bed in the isolation unit. Quote, "My whole shower was covered with them," said Bradica, 45. "I didn't even know they were there at first. I was drying myself with my towel in the bathroom. That's how they got on me. Bird mites." I mean, a physical infestation of bird mites. Doctors say there is no public health hazard. Bird mites can't feed off human skin and will eventually just drop off. But until then, the daughter said, quote, "They were biting her all night long. They were coming in and out of her ears, her nose, and some other places." Okay, anybody want to guess what "some other places" refers to? Not me. Let's just say mighty embarrassing. And I think I'll air dry after my next shower. And the thought of me naked air drying doesn't make you think of pork bellies on the decline. This next story will. Chicago, Reuters reports, pork belly prices are on the decline as interest in the BLT, the popular summer bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich, could dip after an outbreak of salmonella poisoning in 9 U.S. states blamed on raw tomatoes, obviously one of the key ingredients of a BLT. Prices of pork bellies fell $4 in light trading last week, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Quote, "Realistically, people are wary of buying tomatoes. Can't be viewed as a positive development by belly traders," said a securities livestock analyst. Speaking of people who would rather and could actually eat an entire pork belly, people in Scotland are being urged to ditch what they call French fries, right, chips, for mashed peas with their fried fish, and only drink alcohol 5 days a week. The Scottish government's new health campaign advises people to have mushy peas with their fish suppers. One poster with a picture of a pint of beer urges people to avoid booze for 2 days each week. 2 days. It says, quote, "2 days off a week could help your waistline." Most Scottish fish and chip shops do not sell mushy peas, which are traditionally found in the north of England. The eating advice is contained in menus telling people to order healthy fast food alternatives. For example, unbattered smoked sausage instead of meat pie. Bread-crumbed fish, not battered. One health official said, "It doesn't mean making big sacrifices or cutting out pleasures altogether. Small changes, like walking to work, aiming for at least 2 alcohol-free days per week, or cutting down on crisps and biscuits by making switches to fruits or vegetables, all add up." Okay, cutting down on potato chips and biscuits, beer only 5 days a week, having smoked sausage as long as it isn't wrapped in batter? How do I get on this diet? I've been working out with a trainer for most of this spring, several times a week. I've lost a ton of weight, but the diet I've been on is so strict that I'm not allowed to have, like, even peas at all. Peas are considered, you know, kind of a treat on my diet. Alcohol 5 days a week. My trainer gives me a hard time when I drink fruit juice instead of water. Cut down on the chips and biscuits. Exactly how many biscuits are still allowed on this new Scottish diet? I want in. Smoked sausage without the batter? Can I tell you what would happen if I told the woman I train with, Miss Andrea, that sure, I had some smoked sausages, but at least they weren't wrapped in batter? First, she would make me do step aerobics until I fell over dead from a heart attack. Then she would perform CPR, bring me back to life, make me do 100 crunches and 8,000 push-ups while she was standing on my back in black high heels, holding a barbell. I'd move to Scotland, but Andrea would just hunt me down and I'd be kilt all over again. And I guess that's probably a good time for us to bring in Carol Simontacci, who also keeps track of health issues. As I mentioned earlier, she's the author of The Crazy Makers, How the Food Industry is Destroying Our Brains and Harming Our Children. And Carol, good evening to you.
Good evening to you as well.
How does that diet sound?
I was just shuddering while you were talking about it.
Beer just 5 days a week. Stop for 2 days a week is a health regimen.
Mashed peas, though. I don't get that one.
Yeah, mashed peas. I guess it's one of those greater good things. If you have mashed peas instead of the chips, instead of the French fries, that's, I guess, a forward progress. But I don't know.
Well, I put my weight loss clients on a program, and I don't know if you want to talk about it sometime. It certainly is kind of in between where you guys have been talking, I think. But mashed peas, I guess, would then be considered a legume, and I allow my clients to have one serving of those per day. So on my diet,
okay,
you can have those mashed peas and feel not guilty.
Once a day. Okay. Carol, I'll save that for another day. I want to talk about this movement to get red dyes, well, various food dyes removed from foods on the premise that it drives kids crazy. Now, as somebody who's into food science, I have to ask you, how much science is going into that food argument?
Really, not very much. When I wrote Crazy Makers, it was about 5 or 6 years ago, about 8 years ago now, I spent a long time trying to find any primary research, even secondary research, on the influence of food additives to the human brain. Couldn't find very much, and I think it's because it's not mandated by Congress. You know, Congress passed a Delaney Clause that said they have to check to see if certain food additives can cause cancer in laboratory animals. We don't have anything like that in terms of food additives in the brain. I did find a few things, and we know, of course, that some of the additives will have influences on the human brain.
Okay. But, like, what kind of influence? Like, some of the things we've heard is that a perfectly normal, happy, well-adjusted child will be sitting there one moment and then eat some Twizzlers that has red dye number, 4,000 in it or whatever. And the next thing you know, the kid is running around, crying, having a tantrum. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, moms seem to have, I think, a better clue about foods or pseudo-foods and what it's doing to the kids' brains than scientists do. The scientist, a true scientist, would say, well, okay, the Twizzlers caused him to go berserk. Is it the red dye number 5,000, or is it the sugar in the thing, or is it the fact that he was sitting on a pin? I mean, they would have difficulty correlating that, so they would want to do a scientific study where they brought in 5,000 children and fed half of them Twizzlers and the other half, I don't know, something else, and then make some kind of a deduction about it. And, of course, your listeners probably know that Ben Feingold, years ago, was one of the first doctors who started to make a correlation between food additives, chemicals, and the human brain, and he was just about scoffed off the planet for a while, and except he was not scoffed by moms who knew he was onto something. It's a complicated subject. Like I said, I tried to find that research, couldn't find very much. We did find something about sodium lactate being associated with panic disorders. That was about the only thing I could really find in the science back then, and I don't think it's changed much because I haven't read much since then.
All right, well, here's what I want to do. I'm going to go ahead and give the phone numbers out here so other people can join us in this time that we have. Carol Simontacci will hang on till the top of the hour. And then Paul Stonehill coming up on the real story behind the Nazi search for the crystal skulls, featured in the most recent Indiana Jones movie, of course. And then we'll also get some updated work from him on some of these international reports of UFOs and the domestic stories as well. Tomorrow night, Jesus Christ, a Coast to Coast AM. But we'll pick it up next with Carol on the crazy makers, how the food industry is destroying our brains and harming our children on Coast to Coast AM. As long as we're promoting tomorrow night, let me mention, too, that Captain Kelly will be back. Captain Kelly Sweeney is back on dry land. So we'll ask him about some new stories about piracy and some of the things he's heard, the tales he's gathered while he was out on the open sea. And also tomorrow night, too, Jesus Christ on Coast to Coast AM. This is our special guest. Not sure how long we'll have Christ here for. Could be just, a little time. So you're hearing sirens in the background. I don't know what's happened. In fact, just in the last few minutes, I had my window open, and I could hear helicopters overhead and sirens going off like crazy. Of the police type, anyway, it seems to me the local cops may be, the gendarmes may be onto somebody around here. maybe they're closing in on me. Coming up then tomorrow night when we talk with Jesus Christ, we just ask you to keep your questions respectful. Do I sound a little protective? You could say I am. I mean, God consenting and God church willing, I'll be ordained on July 8th. So if you want to look at it this way, it's kind of like having my boss on tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. Paul Stonehill coming up next hour. U.S. group calls for a ban on food dyes. That's why we're talking with Carol Simontacci coming up in just a minute on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Yeah, I did get that blog up, my IP freely blog at coasttocoastam.com. If you click on to coasttocoastam.com, you'll see a tab there for my blog. And I went a little crazy on the whole photo thing, but there's some interesting shots from the town of Hugo, Minnesota, not far from here, that was hit so hard by a tornado recently. And if you want to see some of that damage, you could go look right there. There's some other personal photos, more for fun, that I threw up there, too. U.S. group calls for a ban on food dyes. The story this week, an American consumer advocacy group lobbying the government to ban the use of 8 artificial food dyes approved for use in the U.S. and Canada, which it claims are linked to hyperactivity and behavior problems in some children. This is a story actually from Canada.com. The Center for Science and the Public Interest petitioned the Food and Drug Administration Tuesday to ban yellow number 5, red 40, blue 1, blue 2, green 3, orange B, red 3, and yellow 6. And we are just talking with Carol Simontacci, who's the author of The Crazy Makers, the book which explains exactly how the food industry is destroying our brains and harming our children, that there is no pure science on any of these food additives that you've been able to find so far, but just anecdotal evidence from parents saying, yeah, my kid eats this stuff and goes crazy.
Yes, I did not see that report that you just referred to. I'd like to see if they did have some primary research, because that would be an exciting thing to start looking into. I was going through the supermarket a couple of years ago just looking at what kids are eating and the astonishing array of colors that was in some of this stuff. Like, for example, fruit drinks. They were to simulate fruit drinks, but they're this bright blue color. And the thing that had concerned me, Ian, is that really they don't do the research on how those foods affect the human brain. They've looked at cancer and so on, and that's one thing that's, of course, very important to look at. But, the brain is very complex, and those neurochemicals and those neurotransmitters and biochemicals and so on, sometimes the chemicals that we ingest, whether wittingly or unwittingly, they have similar effects upon the human brain as our own internal biochemistry. Well, for example, they can incite a biochemical response because they're similar in nature, they're similar chemically to the chemicals that we produce in our own bodies.
Well, give me an example of a food additive or something that the food industry knows is not good for us that is destroying our brain, something that has been verified through science.
Well, there is one chemical. It's called tartrazine. It's a food additive that's known to cause behavioral disturbances. For example, they know that it's going to set your kids up for a problem. The sodium lactate that I referred to earlier, they've done a couple of studies on those. It does have GRAS status, or generally regarded as safe status. It's added to margarine to retard flavor reversion, but we know that in certain susceptible individuals, it precipitates panic attacks. Now, when you look on a package of something called something like Lunchables or just about any packaged food, the entrees, it has sodium lactate added to it. So if you happen to be susceptible to sodium lactate, it could induce panic attacks, and you would never associate those two events, eating cream of chicken soup or whatever it is, with having a panic attack later on. We know that people with multiple chemical sensitivity syndrome, where they have symptoms of panic disorder, chest tightness, shortness of breath, and so on, we know that the sodium lactate can produce the panic attacks in those people as well. So again, the science is scanty, but I think that mothers are more intuitively in touch with that than the scientists, where they'll see if they give this child a certain thing, that the kid acts a certain way later on. And we need to respect that intuition.
Well, sure. But at the same time, both children, mothers, adults, some people make associations between something in their environment and the way in which they're behaving, which sort of even defies logic, not just science. And the fact that they experience it has to be understood as something which we need to hear. But it's another thing to introduce legislation based on someone's experience. I'll give you another example of that. It came up in crypto news a couple of weeks ago. It was about the people who are saying that they are affected by Wi-Fi, that if they walk into a building that has wireless internet, they feel a tightness in their chest, they begin to go through some symptoms. And I'm thinking to myself, I mean, there are whole cities that are already Wi-Fi.
And they're
suing to stop Wi-Fi from taking over the planet. I think they're spooning against the tide. But, I mean, there doesn't seem to be any evidence of that. But their testimony is offered with a great amount of sincerity.
Well, you're raising very complex issues. I mean, how much is a matter of personal choice, personal discipline, and how much is a legislative matter? You know, I personally think that Coke and soft drinks should be banned from the planet. I think they're the most toxic thing that you can put into your body. But is that a social concern that we need to get involved with legislation, or should we just teach people to avoid that? It is difficult, though, to avoid a lot of the food additives. And when you're looking at the labels, you may not be able to even discover by reading the label that such and such a food additive is even in that, or how much is in that and how much is going to affect you, or how much the combination of those food chemicals are going to affect you biochemically. And you know, we kind of laugh at those people, you know, like the Wi-Fi thing you bring up, but I honestly believe it's true. I think that they probably are very sensitive. But, the other thing, Ian, if you are always eating those foods, if you're eating those foods every single day, which a lot of kids are, or even a lot of adults are, you would never be able to make an association because you always feel that way and you're always eating that stuff. You would never make that association.
Right. Well, and maybe the same thing's true with Wi-Fi, though. Then it's ubiquitous in so many cities already. So, if it's everywhere, how can you know when you're being affected by it? I mean, as it is, even in homes that aren't wireless. I mean, in my house, I have no fewer than, I think, according to my laptop, I think there are 8 people in my neighborhood who have Wi-Fi whose signals pass through my house. So even if I went with a hard line in my house, there would still be 8 neighbors that are getting Wi-Fi that my computer can pick up if I'd wanted to.
Well, Ian, we are changing our world, aren't we? We're changing our world permanently without any evidence, pro or con, about how it's affecting us.
What would you rather have somebody drink? And I mean this in all sincerity, a Coca-Cola or hard liquor? What's worse for them? I may be giving you a Sophie's choice. I'm just asking you. You said it was the worst thing on the planet. You want to get it off the planet? That's fine. What's better than Coca-Cola? I mean, is beer a better choice?
Oh, you're going to really hate me when I say this. Okay.
You
when I put people
want
on my program, I give them the choice of water and herbal tea.
Right.
And occasionally, wow, if you want to have a beer, occasionally, you could do that occasionally. You could have a glass of wine that would replace one of your fruit servings. I don't think there's a whole lot on this earth that's very safe to drink unless it's really natural, because your liver has to deal with it. Your brain has to deal with it. You know, you asked me the question about Coca-Cola and hard liquor. I would have to say it would be a toss-up.
You know, one of the reasons why I have been losing so much weight is that my doctor determined that I have a fatty liver. So I'm just a titch above normal, but I'm trying to bring it down into normal. And it was a weird realization that I have foie gras. I actually have something, a dish that other people are trying to eat on purpose, and I have it. It's in my body already. Well, let's go ahead and grab a couple of people who are hanging on for Carol Simontacci. The book is The Crazy Makers, How the Food Industry is Destroying Our Brains and Harming Our Children. We're talking to her before the top of the hour when Paul Stonehill comes on. I want to ask more about the food industry in a second, but first let's grab Mark in Modesto, California on Coast to Coast AM for Carol. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi. Carol, my first thing in, you were talking about some tweezers and some dyes to put in it and some unorganic sugar to put in it. But wouldn't it be simpler for them to make organic Twizzlers instead of
organic Twizzlers?
Red dye and unorganic sugar and everything that's in them.
Yeah, where are you on organic Twizzlers, Carol? I think that's a great point.
I have to confess, I don't know what a Twizzler is. I didn't know if you were making up that word, if there really is such a thing as a Twizzler.
It's a delightful, fat-free, non-chocolate candy, but it does have red dye all over it. Yeah.
Okay, well, if it has sugar in it, and if I really pull people back from eating sugar. Sugar in any form, whether organic or not, is really harmful. Now, if you had a Twizzler once in a while, it's not going to hurt you. Twizzlers every day, it's going to add up.
Okay.
Organic
but, I mean,
or not.
It is, I mean, you sound like a very tough dietitian. Are there ever
tough. Yes.
Are there ever treats in there, or is it like, again, mashed peas is your treat for the day for...
No, we have treats. We have we have fresh fruit. I'm not so hardcore as to believe that chocolate is the mother of all evils. I think chocolate has a place. I suppose it's a legume, and I suggest a half a cup a day. Although chocolate would not be in that category, but I think you could have, you know, some treats once in a while. I have last night. You'll love this. I went out to dinner with a friend, and I had some kind of a unbelievable fruit tart. It was incredibly decadent. It didn't hurt my body at all. If I had it every day, then we'd see pounds stacking on.
No, you actually ate like the graham cracker cup that it came in, or whatever it was.
It was a little higher quality than graham crackers. Okay, this was really top.
Well,
it's from it imported from Italy, so it had to be good.
All right, look good enough for me. Denver is in Indianapolis on Coast to Coast AM. Denver.
Yes, I have a question. Where does the red dye come from? Because I know I went on a school field trip when I was younger, and a certain factory in Indianapolis, they said the candies such as Skittles with the red dye were made from a bug called the cochineal. And if that's true, I just wonder if some of the things that's coming from it aren't blood-borne pathogens that's coming from crazy bugs, basically.
That's an interesting thought. Yeah, how do they make these dyes? Do you know?
Well, the cochineal that you're talking about, actually, that's the yellow dye number 5.
That was on the banned list.
That
was on the list they're searching to ban.
Yes. I don't know where the others come from, but I don't want to be eating the cochineal.
What's a cochineal? What is it?
Most of it is just put together in a chemist beak or someplace, laboratory.
But does yellow number 5 actually come from a bug?
Yeah, cochineal
it does?
Bug.
It comes from would they crush the bugs? How do they get the dye out?
Some things you don't want to know.
Yeah, I do want to know that.
I don't want to know that.
So do they like grind it up? Do they have like a big vat? Do they boil it out?
Just be glad you don't have that job.
Okay.
That's a bad job.
All right. What other ways, though, are the in your book, in your research, verifiable ways that the food industry is making us crazy?
the food additives are one thing. The other, another thing that they're doing is that they're actually stripping out the nutrition from the food and replacing it with synthetic forms. For example, I am a big proponent of eating fat. I think fat is a very important food group. And, of course, I'm talking about olive oil and butter and macadamia nut butter, coconut oil, and so on. I mean, these are incredibly important to the human body, to the human brain. 75% of your brain is fat, and that's supposed to be there. And when they strip it out of the food supply and say, well, it's low fat, therefore it's healthy, that is one of the most devastating things that the food industry is doing to us. Another thing that they're doing is just that they're highly processing it. They, you know, in the cooking and the heating it to high temperatures, and it alters the molecular composition of it so that it doesn't have that life anymore. People really do need to be eating organically. They need to be eating fresh from the garden, as minimally processed as possible, so that food still has the inherent life in it.
What about meat?
I'm not a vegetarian. I think that meat has a very important place in the human diet. Again, I would prefer that it be organic. I was up in Baltimore, Maryland area a couple years ago, and I didn't realize that that was the home of one of the major chicken processing plants in the country. They process in that one small area over 1 million chickens a day. And they have injected them with so many hormones and so many antibiotics and so on that the chickens literally are deformed. And we're eating that, you know. And we know that a lot of those hormones and so on don't break down in the cooking process. So we're getting those. And that does affect our brain, our neurochemistry, our endocrine system, and so on. And so, you know, we try to, again, get food as minimally processed as possible.
Well, I like that idea. Let me ask you about the brain food, though, too, because I've heard similar arguments made about milk, that we shouldn't be drinking milk, that that's bad for our brains, or that, for that matter, that it's one of the reasons why girls are developing faster. Where are you on the hormones in our food supply as changing our bodies at an earlier age, for example?
Well, you know, again, because I like to see science, you know, I'm troubled by the fact that nobody has looked at that. But then we look at epidemiological studies, and yes, our little girls are developing breasts, and their hormones are changing at the ages of 5 and 7 and 8. I mean, that to me is very, very troubling. Little boys, you know, are affected by that as well. I see fat deposition on little boys that would be untypical of normal child development. Where are those hormones coming from? You know, when you ask about milk, you know, are you talking about milk or are you talking about milk? When I was growing up, I had my own cow named Betsy, and my dad would go out and milk Betsy, and he didn't feed her any hormones or anything. I mean, it was fresh and out of the cow, and I think that's a different substance than when you go into the supermarket and buy pasteurized, homogenized, antibiotic-laced, hormone-laced milk from the shelf. I think we're talking about two completely different things.
Robert's in Illinois on Coast to Coast AM, and the time that we have for Carol Simontacci, author of The Crazy Makers, How the Food Industry is Destroying Our Brains and Harming Our Children. Robert?
Thanks, Ian. Carol, how do you really get rid of the pesticide in fruit? Is it true that just water will nullify the pesticide, or do you have to use vinegar? What do you recommend?
On some of them, yes, you can. You do need to wash them in some kind of a substance that will remove. Most of the pesticides are oil-based, and so simply washing with water is not going to do it. And they do have food washes available in the produce section in supermarkets. Some of them, however, cannot be washed away because they're actually embedded in the fruit itself. If they spray it on when it's just a flower and a bud or a small fruit, then it actually becomes part of the fruit itself, and then you cannot wash it off. Some of it can be taken off by peeling it.
I've heard that if you buy organic fruit or vegetables, you shouldn't wash them. Is that true? Have you heard that?
I haven't heard that, but I would wash it. Who knows who's been touching it?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'd heard that there was some, that it was actually that better for you to eat them without having
washed
them.
That sounds a little silly to me.
It does to me, too. Wild card line real quickly. David is in Tampa on Coast to Coast AM. You got to get your question in quick, David.
All right, yes, sir. You guys remember in the 70s when they banned the red M&Ms, and just in the 90s they recently brought them back? You know what the problem was with those?
Yeah, they made you horny. Wasn't that the, I believe that was the rumor at the time, wasn't it, that they were an aphrodisiac? But Carol might know better. Carol?
Do not know anything about that.
I believe that was the story. The red M&Ms were not, that's what we heard in our neighborhood. That's where the government banned.
Yeah, what neighborhood did you live in, Ian? I don't know.
Uninformed town, apparently. But we know so much more after talking with Carol Simontacci. Thank you so much. We look forward to continuing this conversation. Next time there's a big food story, we'll give you a call. And have a great night. Looking forward to Paul Stonehill, whom we're bringing in as a result of the popularity of this new Indiana Jones movie. What's up with the latest research on the crystal skulls and the Nazis who were in pursuit of them? Coming up on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett.